Dr. Pry, as the director of the United States Nuclear Strategy Forum, an advisory board to Congress on policies to counter weapons of mass destruction, what actions have been taken by Congress in order to specifically counter weapons of mass destruction today, and how does that compare to the action plan that was taken by Congress, let's say, 15 years ago?
I'm not aware that there was any action plan, rigorous action plan, implemented by Congress. I think there were some vague general ideas that have been out there that have been encouraged by the Congress. For one, part of the problem is there isn't much of an institutional memory in Congress, because people run for re-election every 2 years. You have a certain amount of turnover. Strengthening of the national missile defense is usually one thing Congress has advocated, but that hasn't happened. Our national missile defenses have basically not improved very much. There have been proposals to Congress that we have a much better national missile defense, that we bring back Ronald Reagan's idea of the Strategic Defense Initiative, which was a space-based missile defense that most people don't realize, was actually on the verge of being ready for deployment under the Reagan administration. And it would have neutralized a lot of the threats that we face now. Some would argue that it would have made nuclear missiles obsolete, which would have made America a much safer place. This would neutralize the primary threats we face from Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran now. Most people don't realize that the national missile defenses we have now are not the national missile defenses that were envisioned by Ronald Reagan, by President Reagan. This is, the Clinton administration didn't like Reagan's vision that was derided by the liberal press as Star Wars, a space-based missile defense. Instead, he went with the least effective kind of missile defense, and he was forced to deploy a missile defense by Congress, by the way. Bill Clinton was dragged, kicking and screaming, to deploy a national missile defense. It was Congress, in a bill called H.R. 1, that was introduced by a gentleman named Kurt Weldon. He used to be one of the people I worked with in Congress, and he's a member of my current task force. Another member of my task force is Ambassador Henry Cooper, who was one of the directors of Ronald Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative. And both of these guys, it was Kurt Weldon that forced Bill Clinton, by getting even the Democrats to so strongly support his bill that we should have a national missile defense, that Bill Clinton couldn't reject the bill. Congress would have overridden his veto. And that was because he introduced the bill in response to North Korea's first launch of an ICBM, the Taebodong 1. And that was the writing on the wall. Even the Democrats said, wow, North Korea is going to be a threat to the United States with nuclear missiles. We've got to do something to protect the country. And so they didn't do what they should have done, which was gone back to Reagan's idea of Star Wars and had a space-based, that's the most efficient way of doing it. That's the most effective way of doing it. It could have been a transformative technology that would have solved a lot of problems we're talking about EMP here. Now we have to protect ourselves from an EMP attack. Wouldn't it have been great if we could have shot an EMP attack down? And in fact, that would be an additional layer of defense to try to shoot the thing down before it gets a chance to blow up over us in the first place. But we don't have the Strategic Defense Initiative. It's one of the things that has been proposed to Congress by Ambassador Cooper repeatedly, that we should plug holes, like we're vulnerable from the south. We have no early warning radars facing that way. I'm afraid Congress doesn't have a very good record in protecting us from weapons of mass destruction, certainly not nuclear missile weapons of mass destruction. They've got a somewhat better record when it comes to biological and chemical weapons. We've given a lot of funding to the Center for Disease Control and included those scenarios, chemical and biological attacks, in our national planning scenarios. So we're supposed to be planning and training for chemical and biological attacks. Congress hasn't done so great on cyber. You see how we're being victimized by it. But we at least do have a cyber command. We didn't have a cyber command until Congress established it. And we have cyber security offices from the White House all the way down to the county level. And I'm sure it's the same in Canada. You've probably got Office of Cybersecurity from the Prime Minister's office all the way down to the county level. So that at least there's a structure there of people that are worried about cyber and think about cyber and try to do something about it. So things have been done for all of the threats except EMP. You know, virtually nothing has been done there, except by my task force and these initiatives that I told you about, where we got some states to pass initiatives. Plus, we have some legislation pending that I hope will pass that will be giant steps in the right direction. But the thing we're least protected against is the EMP threats. And I can't say that Congress has covered itself with glory, you know, when it comes to any of these national security threats. I don't think we've done enough against any of them. But the biggest one, the one we have to give the highest priority to, is the one we've been discussing, you know, because it's the easiest one to do by the bad guys. They're clearly planning to do it. They write about it. We've seen them practice it. And it's something that would cost us the least money to protect ourselves against. You know, so you've got to deal with first things first.
Certainly. Dr. Pry, you also served on the Congressional Commission on the Strategic Posture of the United States from 2008 to 2009. You also served on the Commission on the New York Strategic Posture of the United States from 2006 to 2008. And the Commission to Assess the Threat to the United States from Electromagnetic Pulse, EMP, attacks from 2001 to 2008. Please discuss the impact of these commissions and how have they contributed to the education of the public in regards to major issues of concern pertaining to both state and non-state actors.
Well, let me start with the EMP Commission first. You know, we've already talked at length
about
it. Yes,
we have.
And, you know, but were it not for the EMP Commission, you know, the public and policymakers wouldn't even know about the EMP threat right now. So that commission made an enormous contribution. And it also, you know, by declassifying this and saying, no, Department of Defense, CIA, we're not going to keep this stuff secret anymore. We're going to go out there and tell the people because they've got to know. If you know, it's the job is not getting done in terms of getting ourselves protected. And the commission also provided the blueprint for protecting our society. And that very blueprint is what my task force has been trying to implement all these years. So they've made a tremendous contribution. Strategic posture commissions that you described there, you know, both of them had pretty much the same kind of function, which was to look at our nuclear strategic posture. You know, how many missiles do we have? How many warheads do we have? What's our scientific research into nuclear weapons look like? What's the defense industrial base for making the best, most modern nuclear weapons we can have so that we can deter or defeat our adversaries in the nuclear war environment? Those commissions, I think, made a very important role in that, and at least they informed policymakers and the public and anybody willing to read those reports and listen to them that our nuclear deterrent is in really bad shape, you know, that it has been neglected for years, that our strategic bombers are older than the pilots that fly them, that there are missiles, you know, and the weapons on them are decades old, that the kind of technology is obsolete for the threats that we face now in the future, that because we haven't tested, that there are serious questions about what is called stockpile stewardship. You know, we gave up nuclear testing back in 1992, and under the Clinton administration, and because Bill Clinton had this bright idea that we could rely on the nuclear weapons labs to do what's called science-based stockpile stewardship. So that they would, you know, you'd get a bunch of scientists who would open up a nuclear weapon, and they would maybe test components and things like that to try to figure out if the weapon will still work, and is it reliable. And it's an extremely controversial program. You know, the labs, the guys that are paid to do this stockpile stewardship, swear that, yeah, the weapons will work. Of course, they get paid to say that, basically, okay?
And a lot of money.
Yeah, that's the primary thing that keeps the labs open and these guys employed, you know? But people like Dr. John Foster, who is probably the foremost nuclear weapons expert in the free world, he was the director of Lawrence Livermore National Lab, where the hydrogen bomb was invented, and he has designed most of the nuclear weapons that are in the current inventory of the United States. You know, Foster thinks that basically it's not really true, that you can't really, you know, without any nuclear testing that we've done, you know, given the complexity of our nuclear weapons, have the kind of confidence these guys are pretending to have, and that it was a big mistake to stop nuclear testing. And, you know, you know, the reason the Clinton administration did it is that we signed a, is that Bill Clinton wanted to promote a thing called the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, so that nuclear testing of any kind would be illegal all over the world. And he wanted to get Russia to sign on to this. Now, the Congress never agreed to that, you know, because they listened to guys like Dr. Foster that said, well, you know, if we do that, our nuclear deterrent is going to become obsolete. And so Congress would not pass the treaty, the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. Nonetheless, Bill Clinton entered into basically an understanding or an executive agreement with the Russians, with Boris Yeltsin at the time, and said, if we don't test, you guys don't test. You know, but the, you know, but the Russians cheated on the treaty, but we still don't test. You know, we caught them doing, during the Clinton administration, what are called at least hydrodynamic nuclear tests. And there were these mysterious earthquakes that kept happening in Novaya Zemlya, which is their test facility. Every year, you know, they're reported these seismic events. There just aren't that many earthquakes that happen in Novaya Zemlya, okay? You know, so it looks like the Russians have, you know, at least done hydrodynamic, which is real low-yield testing. And you can do what's called, you can actually cheat on a treaty like this by doing decoupled testing. You know, and what it is you dig a big hole underground or use a cavern of some kind, a big cavern that might have been a mine or something like that, so that when the bomb goes off, and you can, and sometimes you can fill this with a gas or a material so that it'll cushion the explosion and muffle the explosion, you know. It's a way of silencing a nuclear explosion. So you can cheat and conduct a nuclear test that will read like a small earthquake, you know, and people won't be able to tell, hey, is that an earthquake or is that an actual nuclear test? But the, so the Russians were cheating on it, you know, for a long time. But we adhered, as we always do, to our agreements, and we haven't tested. But I'm going on at length. That's just one aspect of it, you know, where we haven't tested our weapons. Also, the Obama administration, between Obama and Bill Clinton, they pretty much dismantled the defense industrial base that supported our nuclear industry. You know, we can't, we don't make tritium anymore. You know, we don't make plutonium anymore. Pakistan actually makes more nuclear materials and makes more new nuclear weapons every year than the United States.
That's a major concern.
Yeah, none of our nuclear weapons are new because people think, well, nuclear weapons are never going to be used, right? You know, nuclear weapons hopefully never will be used if you deter the other side from using them because you've got a credible, believable force that he's afraid of. But if you allow your nuclear deterrent to deteriorate so that he's not afraid of it, if the nuclear sword becomes rusty and old and he thinks it won't work anymore, that's not a deterrent. And so this is a very dangerous thing. Security structure of the world, you know, actually is based, the foundation of it, you know, is basically the nuclear deterrent, because that is the greatest weapon of destruction mankind has devised. If an adversary thinks he can prevail at the nuclear level, then he's willing to engage in all kinds of aggressive activity at lower levels, maybe even at the highest level, and gamble that he can take you out in a nuclear war. But this probably explains, it's, the theory is called escalation dominance. If your nuclear deterrent is strong enough so that you could prevent the other guy from winning, or even defeat him in a nuclear exchange, then he will be deterred, and he won't risk confronting you, you know, at lower levels of violence, you know, because he'll be afraid that it would escalate to that highest level. That's how John F. Kennedy won the Cuban Missile Crisis, because he had escalation dominance over Russia. You know, he had five times as many ICBMs as Russia had, and our technology was better. But the technology is all, the situation is almost completely reversed today. This is one of the observations that that commission made. You know, it pointed out that Russia has got a virtual monopoly in tactical nuclear weapons. The Soviet Union never achieved a monopoly in tactical nuclear weapons. These are nuclear weapons that would be used in the battlefield or against Europe. They would be there. They include many small yield nuclear weapons, but also weapons that are big enough to destroy a city or to destroy an army out in the field, and they're for battlefield use. You know, Russia has got thousands of them. You know, the estimates are from 3,000 to 20,000 tactical nuclear weapons. We don't know how many they've got. We know for sure we have almost none left. You know, at best we've got 200, less than 200, obsolete gravity bombs, you know, in known locations stored away in Western Europe. Just 200 at most.
That's insufficient.
Yeah, it's grossly insufficient.